dueling rallies as both President Obama and Donald Trump appear in Jacksonville, with Election Day just 4 days away. And it's Crustacean Nation as the Jacksonville Suns are renamed the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Then later, hear about upcoming events to salute local veterans. Plus, it's a delicious way to support the March of Dimes. A look ahead to a beloved event, Signature Chefs. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday and time to look at the top stories of a very busy news week with our Friday roundtable as we welcome Andrew Pantazzi of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Claire Goforth, who edits Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Fred Matthews, formerly blogging at The Examiner.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
Thanks so much, everyone, for being here, and lots to discuss from the Newsweek. In a moment, we're going to take everyone's calls about the new Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. We got a lot of calls about that yesterday. Give us a call now at 549-2937 as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. But first this morning, capacity crowds Thursday as both President Barack Obama and Republican Donald Trump rallied in Jacksonville. The president appeared at UNF, Trump at the West Side Equestrian Center. Let's listen to excerpts from both of those events, beginning with the president.
I know, because I've met so many young people. You are full of idealism. You want to make changes, but sometimes you think that there's a way to do it and not be involved in politics. But I'm telling you right now, it is great if you've marched for criminal justice reform. But you've got to vote for a president in the Congress and state's attorneys and prosecutors who actually care about disrupting the pipeline from underfunded schools to overcrowded jails.
That was Obama at UNF. Here's Donald Trump speaking to a crowd at the West Side Jacksonville Equestrian Center.
This group and many, many, many like you, every place we go, the love of this country is incredible. Thank you, honey.
We are fighting for every citizen who believes that government should serve the people, not the donors and not the special interest. We're fighting to unlock the potential of every American community and every American family who hope and pray and yearn for a better future. With your vote, we are just, can you believe this, 5 days away from the change you've been waiting for your entire life. 5 days away.
All right. Give us a call with your thoughts about the election at 549-2937. We are 4 days away from November 8th. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. I think we have to go all the way back to October of 1960 when both Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy campaigned in Jacksonville on the same day to have two of the highest level candidates or surrogates with a sitting president coming to Jacksonville at the same time. That gives you a sense of not just Florida's importance, but the vote margin here in North Florida for these campaigns.
It was quite a historic day. The president of the United States on one side at a very diverse, multicultural university with thousands of people standing in line since 1 o'clock in the morning. On the far west side at the Equestrian Center, we have the Republican nominee for president of the United States making, what, his third appearance here, at least a second in town that I can remember, probably his third since he started running. I mean, and both capacity crowds. It was a historic day for Jacksonville, one to be remembered with Air Force One on the tarmac, except for those people who had to stand in line a long time.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it shows the importance of Florida. Donald Trump has to win Florida and North Carolina as a major path for him to get at least close to 270. He can't lose Florida and he can't lose North Carolina. That's where the pathway has been for the candidates. Florida, North Carolina, Nevada. Trump has gone to Ohio off of that path, but it's been Florida, North Carolina, Ohio. That's what the Hillary Clinton has done. And basically the president has followed that same pathway. So it was quite a a lot going on yesterday, but it will show the importance of Florida and certainly the importance of the gateway to Florida.
Give us a call. Let us know if you voted, if you're waiting till Election Day to vote, who you're going to vote for, 549-2937. Claire Goforth, about maybe as much as 40 to 50% of the likely electorate in this state has already early voted, with Republicans having a sliver of an edge in total ballots cast. And we will have to see the final tally, of course, but early voting is certainly robust so far.
Yes, it is. I mean, this is going to be a historic election in terms of voter turnout. People are highly engaged, which is a wonderful thing. It is an interesting polar opposites that we have as far as the candidates and their supporters. Yesterday was a day we will always remember in Jacksonville, for better or for worse. It was rather telling that it was a very diverse crowd out to support the president, and overflow crowd, and Donald Trump's crowd, as was commented by several, was typical of the crowds he's attracted: older, whiter, mailer. And that is very much reflected in the base of the Republican Party, possibly to their detriment at this stage.
That will be the question, Andrew Pantazzi. Can Donald Trump overcome his historic deficits with women, African Americans, Latinos, etc., and some college-educated white women as well? Can he turn out his base, which is overwhelmingly white and male, although white women are also supporting Trump, enough to overcome Democrat Hillary Clinton's advantage with other voters?
If I could answer that, I would hope I would make a lot more money than I do right now. But the polls do show tightening. According to the 538 election model, they are now saying it is split even likelihood for Florida, Nevada, Arizona, Ohio, North Carolina, all leaning red. Of that, that would put him still below 270. He would need New Hampshire and the main second congressional district. But I do think Fred is absolutely right. You know, if he is going to win, he needs Florida and he needs North Florida. And in order to do that, he needs to return Jacksonville to the type of numbers W got. When George W. Bush ran in 2000, he won by 17 points over Al Gore in Jacksonville. When he ran in 2004, he won by 16 points in Jacksonville. And then when John McCain ran against Barack Obama, he won by only 1.9 points. So what Donald Trump needs is to really run up the score. The Republican game plan is, in Florida, you win almost all the counties of Florida, while the Democrats focus on just these few urban counties. And the Democrats need to just stop him in Pensacola and Jacksonville from running up the score there, since that's the largest population bases for Republicans. And if they can do that like Obama did, then they've got it in the bag. Whereas if he can bring it back to George W. Bush, if you remember 2004 when he had the stadium filled with 50,000 people, that's what he needs to have happen here.
Tim Gibbons, let's talk about the different types of rallies that we saw yesterday, with Obama and Trump talking about very different things. Trump saying at his rally on the West Side that he would tax American companies 35% the price of their products if they move manufacturing overseas, cut the corporate tax rate from 35 to 15%, repeal the Affordable Care Act. President Obama talking, as we heard, about things like criminal justice reform, completely different set of issues.
Because neither of those were designed to attract new voters, or designed to actually turn out the voters for each of those parties, and those are hot button issues on each side. I find interesting when we talk about, as Andrew just did, about the bringing back the Republican voters. That's really the game plan that Trump has to do now, of getting Republicans in Jacksonville who weren't for him in the primary, who, you know, reluctantly will vote for him. But if he can bring enough of them back, and you look at that list of, you know, Obamacare, corporate taxes, and repatriation of money that companies have overseas, hit totally different demographics, but can energize different parts of the base again.
What we saw from 2004 to 2008, that's interesting. So John McCain got about like 10,000 votes less than George W. Bush did here. But the main gain, Barack Obama had a net gain of 65,000 votes in Duval County alone. And that's because he got 55,000 more votes than John Kerry did. So I think Donald Trump needs to increase his turnout, but he also needs to hope that Hillary Clinton is not getting the same kind of enthusiasm and turnout that Barack Obama did.
You look at the other speakers on Trump's stage who are trying to appeal to women, who are trying to appeal to minorities, and it's very much saying, in that case, if I can just peel off some of those...
Sure.
That creates that better market.
And Fred Matthews, some of the president's comments yesterday seemed designed to peel off moderate Republican voters when he said things like, when I ran against Romney in 2012, I disagreed with him, but I never thought our democracy would be injured by Romney taking office.
I mean, that's a key thing. That's a key thing all the way around, and that's one of the threads that they're pulling on. That's what we're seeing now coming up in all of the anti-Trump commercials. It's about fitness for office. The president is now openly saying that this guy is not fit for office. The first lady is basically now saying openly, this guy is not fit for office. The commercials now are saying that openly, and by running those commercials, of course, where allegedly he's groped women, and of course the things he said about the beauty pageant contestants, all of these things are now are being laid bare in these final 3 days. One additional thing, just to look at the local thread here, there are a number of candidates obviously you expect to be at the Trump rally. They were there before. But one that seems a bit out of place and one we need to watch to see where she's going to land after this is Jennifer Carroll, former lieutenant governor. Now, this is the second time she's given a full-throated endorsement of Donald Trump. And she gave up the position at Channel 4 as being political analysis, what we thought was a pretty good job, you know, for what it pays. But now to get into this campaign full-throated. So the interesting thing to see is where she's going to land, how the Republican Party is going to treat her once this election is done on come Wednesday morning. What's in the deal for Jennifer here? Because it doesn't seem to be anything that we can see, but there has to be something here to have her on that stage giving this kind of endorsement, knowing full well that You still won't be able to get elected if the party is looking for you to bring a black constituency along with you. What's the deal for Jennifer Carroll?
549-2937. Let us know what you think about all of these comments. Let us know if you voted. Are you waiting till election day? Give us a call. Let's begin with Linda on the West Side. Hi, Linda. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead.
I just had a comment. I actually attended the rally yesterday for Obama at UNF. We were in line. I think we got there, took a Uber car there. We got there about 10 o'clock and just waited in line. But we waited in line with these wonderful kids, young people. A girl was from Lithuania, a boy was from the Netherlands, and then another girl was from France. And the girl from France was actually just there by herself. We just happened to be with them. But I just wanted to say that in talking with each of them, and we had plenty of time to chat, that they were just, and in their country, their feel for it was that they were just, so in favor of and so highly respectful of Barack Obama and all that he stands for, and just kind of were incredulous that competition, I think as one of them called it here, is so close with Hillary and Trump. But anyway, I got in to see him. I was in the overflow area, and all of us did, and we got to actually shake Barack Obama's hand, and they all cried. It was very moving to see how it touched them so much to be there and to be part of this.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks for the call. Claire? Okay.
President Obama he inspires so much hope in people. He's a Nobel Prize winner. We have to remember that. Internationally, he's very well respected. The opposing message on Trump's side is one that many people have likened to a message of hate. Hate of Muslims, hate of women, hate of Mexicans, hate of Rosie O'Donnell and John Stewart, and the list goes on and on. that is something that I feel has been tearing at the country. The Trump message has been tearing at the fabric of America since he, you know, launched onto the campaign trail. And I think that people are starting to grow weary of the bitterness of the campaign. I think if the Democratic Party had nominated almost anyone but Hillary Clinton, who's such a polarizing figure, this election would be a slam dunk. If she wins, I do...
A slam dunk for
the Democrats.
Really? What would you say to those who see it completely differently? They think that this election would have been a slam dunk for the Republicans if Donald Trump perhaps were not the nominee. If, say, it were John Kasich, for example, the governor of Ohio, running against Hillary Clinton.
I think it would have been a close election if it had been anyone other than Donald Trump. And who knows how that would have gone? Who knows what skeletons would have been shaken out of those closets as well? But I think that we're all just very ready for November 9th at this point.
There's actually election fatigue that's been talked about, of, you know, psychologists saying, their patients coming in just saying, enough, I can't handle it anymore. I have to have it over. I do think that, you know, the old line that if anybody was running against Clinton, they would have won. If anybody else was running against Trump, they would have won. And we just happen to have the two candidates that, you know, nobody's really excited about.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to forget that we have not historically had two candidates whose net favorability is in the negative and is so high in the negative. I mean, both are disliked. But it'll be interesting. Once they are elected, I mean, I still imagine the approval rating will be higher than the favorability, because once you're no longer viewing them as a candidate and instead you're viewing them in office.
Well, Clinton historically has gotten better favorability ratings when she's actually had a job rather than when she's running for a job. So
and that is true.
And that's the irony of not having Marco Rubio as a candidate, as the presidential nominee. It would have been a whole different life.
Oh, yeah.
Youth. You don't have a whole lot of baggage that he would be carrying. It would be a totally different message. And, of course, the Hispanic vote would have to stand with him.
Well, that's actually been disputed, because Marco Rubio is Cuban.
I understand.
And other Latinos in this country, Puerto Ricans, others, don't necessarily stand with the Cuban vote on a whole suite of issues.
Yeah.
However, I think you make such an important point in that when you look at the WikiLeaks emails, it became clear that the Clinton campaign most feared facing Marco Rubio in this election.
Yeah.
Let's go to your calls. Paul is in Orange Park. Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, Melissa. I have two quick points. One is that the Republican leadership in Congress have been distancing themselves from Trump, and I don't think he'll get the cooperation he's expecting from them to accomplish his goals. And the second point is that I heard him say yesterday that he wanted to replace the Affordable Health Care Act with tax-free health savings accounts. Well, 75% of Americans couldn't save up $30,000-$40,000 to get a heart bypass, and then there's no safety net there. So I think that's dead in the water. I just don't see how, if he did get elected, and I hope he doesn't, that it would benefit the American people.
Paul, thanks for the call. Everyone listening, let us know who will get your vote. 549-2937. Steve at the Beaches. Hey, Steve, thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a quick comment that there was one of your guests earlier said that the pre-voters, there had been a slight edge to the Republican turnout. I have voted. I voted mostly out of fatigue. I am a Republican, but I voted Democratic this time, in part because I just couldn't stand the prospect of, I think, Donald Trump being in the office. But my point is that just because there's a larger Republican turnout in the pre-votes does not necessarily mean, in my opinion, that it's trending the Republican way.
Thank you for that call, Steve. Of course, we'll have to wait till election night to find out the final tally. But here's a tweet going along a little bit with what Steve said. Exit polling showed Trump has lost 20% of the GOP early vote. That poll was disputed, though. Okay, what about the caller's point, Tim Gibbons?
I find it fascinating. In these last few days before the election, you have, you know, political reporters who I think are also fatigued, and there's a certain amount of you just got to run the string
We're
out.
We're all pretty fatigued,
right?
Yes.
So you end up with, okay, let's look at the, you know, early voting, who's voting, and do some polls and stuff. But honestly, at this point, you're kind of just marking time until the actual poll that matters, election day, you know, happens, because you can't parse out these people with this party affiliation voted, sure, but that doesn't say who they voted for.
Joel in San Marco. Go ahead, Joel. Hey, Joel.
Hi. Melissa, I'm a registered Republican. I've always voted Republican. This time I'm voting for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, who I know will lose, although I think the Libertarian Party will probably get more votes in this election than they've ever gathered. And just one more statement. I hope this is the last election where the baby boomers are running and are in charge of the media, because I'm so tired of the old divisions that go back to the 1960s about race and gender. I think I work with a lot of young people, Gen Xers and millennials, and they roll their eyes at that stuff. So thanks for taking my call.
Joel, thank you. And yeah, you're right. It's certainly an actuarial certainty that the next election probably won't have the baby boomer influence quite so heavily.
And that's the point of all this, of the Gary Johnsons and those, and many of those in generations two back from where I am at this present point, is that they've also got to be involved in the process throughout. Things don't just happen every 4 years. And that's one of the things that the quote younger, I don't know what you call this. Are they millennials? Is that still too young? Still too old?
The people that are behind the millennials.
Okay. Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. They've got to also look at the structure of politics in this country and participate, because where we are right now is a direct result of actions that took place 10 years ago. In terms of gerrymandering the districts, locking up Congress, the only thing that couldn't be locked up was the presidency. And in one party, they, of course, locked themselves down with this candidate that they have. That's the way they are. So that generation has got to learn that participation is essential. Talking is great. Being angry is understandable. But if you don't participate in the process from bottom up, you're going to end up with the same thing.
But I posted something funny on Twitter. Doesn't that count?
All the time.
Lots of calls.
Why Twitter's being sold.
That's true. And Vine is going away. But let's go to Paul. You know, the old-fashioned way of calling into radio shows is also still alive, as we go to Paula in Palm Coast. Hi, Paula.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I was just calling to say that I'm voting for Jill Stein, and I'm excited to vote for her. And
Okay, yeah, and we've got a bad connection, Paula. But you said Jill Stein. Okay, thanks for that call. Yeah, the Green Party candidate Jill Stein, also on the ticket. Let's go to CJ in St. Nicholas. Hi, CJ. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just want to let you know, you were asking about voting. I did vote early. I voted for Hillary Clinton. And I just wanted to remind people that Trump is not a typical Republican. You know, for those Republicans that are interested in voting for him, he is not for limited government. He wants the government to expand considerably. There will be this deportation force terrorizing the Hispanic community across the country, deporting tens of millions of unregistered immigrants out of the country. And then also, I mean, this notion of building a wall. I mean, it's been debunked that it would do anything, because all you need is a rope and you're able to get over it. We need to rebuild our bridges and roads. We do not need to divert our money into a project that will just cost so much money. And he is not a limited government person. He is not a Republican. I mean, he wants to have a police state. And, you know, people really have got to, you know, if you don't want to vote for him, if you don't want to vote for Clinton, don't vote for Trump. I mean, you can vote for other parties, but for the love of God, don't vote for Trump. Thank you.
All right. Lots of calls, and as we talk about some other headlines of the week, we're also now going to discuss an incredibly divisive issue full of partisan rancor, the new name for our minor league baseball team. Yes, the term jumbo shrimp is, of course, an oxymoron, like, say, military intelligence or city of Jacksonville.
Ooh.
But I digress. Love it or hate it, this town's minor league ball club is now the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. The news was greeted with, let's say, mixed reactions, but when we spoke about the big change Thursday with owner Ken Babby, he was upbeat. Take a listen.
We don't have to win over 1.4 million people in the first 24 hours, and that's okay. There are a lot of people that are really excited about this, and come April, all we're saying is, come on out to the baseball grounds and give this a try and see what the Jumbo Shrimp really are all about.
Babby saying the new name is rich with meaning. It highlights our connection to water, seafood, and it's a play on words. Jacksonville is a big city, but also a small town, just like the Jumbo Shrimp.
That name took a battering.
Oh, yes, it did. You know, Ken Babby said when he changed the name of the Akron minor league team to the Akron Rubber Ducks, people howled in protest, but attendance went up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see if that happens here.
Well, yeah, also, just to be clear, there was also changes made to the stadium and new scoreboards and other things. Yes, it happened at the same time as the name, but you can't prove that the name drove attendance up.
And when you go to the game, let's face it, you don't go necessarily to see the ball, the ball game. You don't sit there for nine innings. You go because at the seventh, you know you're going to sing the national anthem. At the seventh inning, you're going to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. You got dog night where you can bring all your dogs and your pets and hang out and just be there.
Yeah.
You don't go for the game. Who can name who the pitcher is? Who's the manager of the Suns? Nobody knows that.
When Ken was on yesterday, Frank from the Beaches, I think it was, called in and was very adamant about, no, people go to the park to watch the baseball and all of this hoopla around.
He called it a travesty.
Right, and that's not why people come to the game. But the thing is, I think Fred, you're right.
And you know, Ken Babby also took a call from a Mayport shrimper who said, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. You better serve local shrimp.
Amen.
At that ballpark. And Ken Babby said it was going to be like Forrest Gump. We're going to have peeled shrimp. We're going to have fried shrimp. We're going to have barbecued shrimp. We're going to have coconut shrimp. We're going to have to see if that happens. I think that will be kind of interesting.
I don't know if any of the distinguished listeners of public radio will relate to this, but there is a segment of the population out there that's quite sizable that does something called hate watch. It's where you turn on reality TV and you hate it so much that you love it. I think that this team name is going to experience something similar.
Isn't that what Twitter is? It's just hate watching in mass. But do we really think that shellfish and high temperatures at a ballpark is a good idea? Maybe it is. We'll find out.
The idea of ballpark seafood does seem iffy.
But now this is one of those instances in which a younger generation has taken over one of the franchises of our conservative city.
Yeah.
That's what Babby
Ken
represents.
Ken Babby is 35
That's
years
right.
old.
That's right. He is in that age group. And when he was confronted with the question yesterday when he was on the air here about, you know, it being such a travesty and you take it away what the former owners have done with this team, he very artfully stepped around that and indicated he'd talk with the former owner and with Pedro, as he called him, and it works. But this is what the new generation does, and that we have to all adjust to it.
That's right. And let me just add that the former owner, Peter Bregan, Pedro, as he's called, has formally given his blessing of this. Someone did tell me, though, that he took the mats off the field that say Bregan Field, that some are interpreting that as maybe a subtle message, but who knows?
The fact that Ken spent millions of dollars to buy the team, and there's a little bit of, yes, he said in your show, he feels that there's a community ownership sort of thing, but, you know, this isn't the Green Bay Packers. It's not actual community ownership. He bought the team. If he wants to call them the Jacksonville Babbies, he could. That would be weird, but he could.
I'm just looking forward to that giant shrimp mascot costume.
But what do you think? Yeah, let's talk about the logo. What do you think of go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, let's just remember Jumbo Shrimp is no Jacksonville Lizard Kings, which I believe is the best mascot this city has ever had. So if anyone ever wants to make Jacksonville Lizard Kings again,
See, Fred, that's the millennial
Andrew's
voice right there.
That's
the millennial
Lizard
voice.
That's what we're talking about
Lizard
right
King.
Here. Yeah, I mean, whoever's going to wear that Jumbo Shrimp mascot uniform is really going to be the star of the show, whoever gets that job. I, you I guess it'll be the same one.
The logo of the shrimp kind of busting through the waves, that on Twitter at least has gotten some appreciation. The one of the shrimp appearing to get overly comfortable with the state of Florida has gotten some mockery.
Yes, there have been some funny spoofs of that logo.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, he said that the shrimp is tenacious, and my only comment was, I all I want is a live performance by noted rock legends, Tenacious D.
Ooh. Yes.
That's my wish for shrimp the Jacksonville Jumbo tenacious? Shrimp. He said that it is a fighting, gritty. Tenacious, gritty shrimp.
Wait, the fighting shrimp?
Yes.
Well, hey, let's remember this city also has, you know, the Fighting Christians at University Christian High School team. So, I mean, we've got some great fighting right. names.
Well, we'll see. But, I mean, nothing's going to change. I think it'll be a great thing. I mean, it's funny. It's different. We will be a laughingstock for a bit. I'm surprised we haven't made the late news yet. But I guess by the time the election's over, we'll get the late news and they'll put us on it.
We did get upstaged by Binghamton, which has the Rumble Ponies that they just announced.
Good grief. What is that?
What's a rumble pony?
It's a pony that likes to rumble.
Okay, define it with a word. I'm going to take you back to English class.
Well, speaking of being national laughingstocks, finally, it's our look this hour at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily for us, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida does a man get arrested for throwing his glass eye at hospital personnel. According to The Smoking Gun, 54-year-old Edward Dorsey of Largo is under arrest. After he was taken to the hospital for treatment, he was rearrested for taking out his glass eye and throwing it at the attending ER doctor and nurse. Drugs and alcohol appear to have played a role.
No.
I'd rather go blind.
How was his accuracy, though?
That's a good point.
No depth perception at all.
They're keeping an eye on that guy. Only in Florida do men break into a store wearing a tutu. According to Fox 13 News in Tampa, two men, one tutu-clad, broke into the Tampa Farmers Market for a little fruit and soda. Maybe it was a bit of a Halloween hangover.
Drugs and alcohol appear to have been involved.
And finally, my favorite of the week, only in Florida, do squirrels bite unsuspecting senior citizens. Yes, last night, a squirrel wreaked havoc at a Deltona senior living facility. A frantic caller to 911 said the squirrel was attacking people and jumping about the room after somehow getting inside. The critter biting and scratching the senior residents. Many of them were bleeding. Someone threw the squirrel out the door, but not before at least three seniors were injured.
And drugs and alcohol appear to have been involved with the squirrels.
But that's all the squirrel wanted, was to get out.
I was going to say National Lampoon was based on a true story. You just learned that.
And thank you to our panel. How many days is it till the election?
Four.
Too many.
Oh, Andrew Pantazzi, Claire Goforth, Fred Matthews, and Tim Gibbons all working very hard this political season. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
Melissa.
Thank you,
and
Melissa.
We will be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist. Dermatology Specialists of Florida and Aqua Medical Spa provide cosmetic injectables, body contouring, skin tightening, and a full menu of spa services. Information on skincare consultations to help you achieve and maintain healthy skin at aquamedicalspa.com.
Before you head to the polls, do you know what's on your ballot? Let WJCT's 2016 elections page be your guide. State amendments and local referenda, judges up for retention, interviews with candidates for local and state office. It's all there. Click the 2016 elections banner on WJCTnews.org and tune in to 89.9 on election night, November 8th, for live coverage of the return starting at 7.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville's big Week of Valor is coming up, leading up to Veterans Day on November 11th, and there is a lot happening all across our region to honor our men and women in uniform. In a moment, we're going to tell you what's happening down in St. Augustine, but right now we begin with a look ahead to this Sunday's 5K and Patriotic Pause Parade, supporting the USS Adams Museum and the group Canines for Warriors. USS Adams spokesman Joe Snowberger joins us now. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here with me. And let's talk quickly about the 5th Annual Salute to Veterans 5K. And you've even got a Patriotic Pause Parade for people's pets. What's going to be happening?
Well, for 5 years, folks have been coming out as the official kickoff for the Week of Valor for the City of Jacksonville, our 5K. This year, it benefits the USS Adams Museum. This year, we added the Canines for Warriors. So it makes sense that we added our first annual Patriotic Paws Parade. We're expecting lots of doggies in patriotic and cute costumes. We'll be offering awards to them for the cutest and the most patriotic and enhance the reach.
How cute is this? Now, again, this is happening Sunday. People can sign, and it begins at the Jacksonville Landing, 8 a.m. Sunday morning. People can sign up at firstplacesports.com. This all is to support the Canines for Warriors group and also your efforts to bring the retired Navy warship, the USS Adams, to our North Bank riverfront as a museum.
Absolutely. It would be the first Navy warship museum in the state of Florida. We're on track to have her here as soon as we can. It's amazing, the bureaucratic and the agencies that you have to walk through to get things done and wait for shipyards to become available. But she is on her way.
That is so exciting. It's adamstojacks.com to learn more about that. And once you get the ship here, people will be able to go aboard the ship, tour it, learn about its history with the Navy. It'll be a really cool attraction on the Riverwalk.
It'll be
the North Bank.
It'll be a historic venue, but at the same time will be a great attraction venue. Will be the connection between downtown and the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp at the stadium.
Oh, by the way, Joe Snowberger came into the studio wearing a new Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp baseball cap. You're looking good. You like that? Some new merch for you?
Absolutely. Baseball's never been battered and or fried. But the race is the most patriotic run we have in the area. New this year is the Patriotic Pause Parade, but also we're awarding medals to the finishers. We'll have over 600 runners down there in unison singing the five service fight songs. Chase, our sponsor, does such a great job with breakfast and food and beverage. And it'll be 1,000 cowbells ringing everybody home.
Very cool. Again, this is coming up Sunday, bright and early at the Jacksonville Landing. The 5th Annual Salute to Veterans 5K. And with your pets, bring them along for the Patriotic Pause Parade. This is all to kick off the city's Week of Valor. Just go to firstplacesports.com to register. Joe Snowberger joining us. Again, this is all to support the USS Adams Museum. Thanks, Joe, so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Melissa.
Again, that is coming up Sunday in downtown Jacksonville at the Landing. Now, we're going to head down the road a little bit to St. Augustine, where there is quite a bit also planned in the coming days to honor our region's veteran. We speak now with Michael Rothfeld. He's Secretary of the Veterans Council of St. Johns County. And Michael, not to be outdone, St. Johns County is busting out all over with a parade, a military film festival, a concert. Three things happening in St. Johns for veterans, right?
Yes, we're calling it the Veterans Day weekend, and it's November 11th through the 13th. The grand parade is on the 11th. Of November at 11 o'clock. And we have many different military bands marching. We have JROTC marching. We have military vehicles, Tampa Rough Riders, Spanish Color Guard from Spain. The UNF ROTC will will be there. Civil Air Patrol will be marching. We expect over 1,000 marchers. That is November 11th at 11 o'clock. After that parade, starting at 1 o'clock, we have the beginning of a three-day military film festival featuring veterans from Northeast Florida, including Jacksonville and St. Augustine, of course, will be featured in five documentaries that I produced for the Veterans Council. And I want to say that the first documentary that we produced on World War II veterans who live in my community, the reason they were filmed was because I was able to get to Michael Boylan, and he sent over a film crew for 2 days.
That's our CEO here at WJCT.
Yes, yeah. And I thank him repeatedly and all the time for starting us on this. So we have the World War II documentary. Then we have the Korean War documentary, and followed by, of course, the Vietnam documentary, which is five veterans from St. Augustine. Then we did a documentary on prisoners of war, and there were four local ex-POWs, one who lives in Jacksonville, Bill Ingram, who was on the USS Houston, and he's now in his 90s, and we expect him to be there. The last documentary that we're featuring is the story of Canines for Warriors in Ponte Vedra. And we'll have speakers there, including Captain Swanson, who will speak about canines.
Very nice. And yeah, and as we talked about Canines for Warriors in regard to the Jacksonville parade, of course, that's a great organization that pairs up dogs with veterans. Therapy dogs, you know, helping veterans recover from the physical and psychological wounds of war, and they've really had a huge impact.
I think they're the biggest in the country. They're certainly the most successful. They will have a display table in the lobby of the Corazon Theater, where the Military Film Festival will take place. It's at 36 Granada Street in downtown St. Augustine. There is parking in the back of the building. And the last event we have is our benefit concert featuring Lee Greenwood, where all the proceeds will be going to local veterans not-for-profits. Now, as you know, Lee Greenwood was famous for the song God Bless the USA, mm-hmm. and of course he'll be doing that. That'll be at 4 o'clock at the St. Augustine Amphitheater, Sunday, November 13th. There'll be a meet and greet at 4 o'clock. The concert starts at 5.
So much happening both this weekend and next weekend to honor our men and women in uniform here on the First Coast. So, you know, there are many ways to participate, as we've just learned, whether you're in Duval or St. John's County. And we thank you so much, Michael Rothfeld, your Secretary of the Veterans Council of St. John's County. Again, Friday, November 11th, Veterans Day Parade in St. Augustine. Military Film Festival kicks off at St. Augustine's Corazon Cinema Friday through Sunday, 11th through the 13th of November, with the Lee Greenwood Military Benefit Concert on Sunday, the 13th, at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Polls show the presidential race tightening in the final days of the campaign. President Obama criticizes the FBI's handling of the new investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series for the first time since 1908. Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
WJCT and ViStar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all ViStar Credit Union locations and two men in a truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it's your chance to sample some delicious eats from the best chefs in town. Jacksonville foodies are looking forward to their annual opportunity to enjoy great culinary creations, all while raising funds to support the March of Dimes and its mission to improve the health of babies. It's coming up at the annual Signature Chefs Auction, a beloved food and wine event. Spokeswomen Sarah Christian and Tracy Aquila are here to give us a preview. Ladies, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is something that I think people look forward to all year. This is coming up next Thursday, November 10th at the Omni Jacksonville Hotel downtown. Tracy, let's begin with you. Who are the restaurants that are taking part this year? Because it looks pretty darn delicious.
It is. So we have Tom Gray from Moxie. He is our honorary chef, and we're happy to really have him back in this role as our honorary chef. We have Chef Yim from Matthews, Chef Daniel Groschel from Ocean 60, who won the event last year, Chef Logan McCurry from 19, Chef Michael McKinney from Orsay, Chef Waylon Rivers from Black Sheep. We have Chef Tony Charbonnet from Publix, and we have desserts by Chef Malone Fennell at BB's and Biscotti's.
Yum.
So incredible eats.
Yeah, incredible food, Sarah. And of course, one ticket gets you in the door to enjoy this incredible feast. And as I said, it supports the March of Dimes and your mission to improve the health of infants in this area. Can you tell us a little bit about the mission?
Well, the mission is really about raising money for the March of Dimes and the auction event as well. I'm coming back as a representative because I was part of the family last year that was kind of telling our story and how prematurity affected us with my twin girls.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they were born at 27 weeks due to blood pressure issues I had and a stroke. So it can happen to anyone. It can happen quickly. It's something you don't prepare for.
Sure.
So the research and the money raised that goes towards kind of finding out how to stop this from happening is very important.
Yeah. Do you feel that if you'd, it's always easy to say, what could I have done differently? But what's your hope for other parents to be to prepare them or to protect them from this happening? How will that money help other parents?
I think the research end of it kind of looks into what are some of the factors that play a role in prematurity. How can we see those coming and prevent that from happening so often? Mm-hmm. Tracy knows a lot about that.
And building on what Sarah was saying, a lot of what we're doing now with the March of Dimes is bringing all these cross-functional groups together to look at demographics, ethnographics, geographies, height, weight, everything that can impact a woman. It's not, you, as Sarah said, you can take care of yourself and this happens. So how can, as we continue to move through this, continue to find ways to make sure every baby is born a healthy baby? And that's the goal of March of Dimes.
And this is such an easy way to support the March of Dimes. All you have to do is get your ticket for Signature Chefs. Go to signaturechefs.org/Jacksonville and get your ticket now, because this is coming up next Thursday, November 10th at the Omni. Signature Chefs, the best food in town, the best chefs in town, and all to support the March of Dimes. Thank you so much for being with us, Event Chair Tracy Aquila and Mom Sarah Christian. We so appreciate you joining us. Have a great time out there.
Thank you.
And speaking of another great event, we're going to close the show very quickly with a ticket giveaway. We gave away two of these yesterday, and there was so much interest, we're going to give away two more. Are you interested in two VIP tickets to Brew at the Zoo? Now, this event was postponed because of Hurricane Matthew. It is coming up next Friday, November 11th at the zoo. These are tickets that are valued at $100 each, and they come to us courtesy of Chris Brown at 927 Events. We are going to pick a winner at random. Email us now if you want two VIP tickets to next week's Brew at the Zoo. That is food and drink at the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens, a very fun event. Email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We're going to pick one winner at random today. The deadline to email us is 10:30 a.m. this morning, so get your emails to us now. Producer Kevin Mershart will pick a random winner. Again, two VIP tickets to Brew at the Zoo. That is also coming up next week. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chepchik. We always want your feedback. Emails do go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast, now up on iTunes and the WJCT app. Diane Rehm is up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.